He bought the gun in Long Beach at a pawn shop called Lucky's. It was a Trojan 9mm. This is from the police report. The trigger mechanism was rusty, so he replaced it using a kit he bought on the internet. It was May. He was still living in Sacramento, a squinty kid with chapped lips who spent his days reading about famous murders at the public library. Before that, he'd lived in Texas, Montana, and Iowa. Nowhere for more than 4 months. Sometimes he slept in his car. There was a journey he was taking. Each mile brought him closer to an end. The Trojan was one of three guns he'd purchased in the months leading up to the event. He kept them in the trunk of his car, an old yellow Honda the police would later find in a parking lot near the Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles. The odometer read 210,000 miles. He had done a lot of driving in the 15 months since he'd left college. Sometimes he took odd jobs for cash: day labor, fast food, construction. He stayed off the grid. Everybody said the same thing. He was quiet, kept to himself, a little intense. This was later, after the multi-pronged investigations, the illustrated timelines documenting his journey, the painstaking reconstruction of each leg. Now there are bar graphs, books in progress. But in the early hours after the event, nobody knew anything. Who was this young man? Where had he come from? They say nature abhors a vacuum, but CNN hates it more. Seconds after the first shot, journalists were scrambling for context, rewinding the tape, analyzing angles and trajectories. Within hours, they had a name, pictures. A young man, bright-eyed and milky-skinned, frowning into the sun. Nothing as damning as Lee Harvey Oswald brandishing his rifle, but viewed through the lens of what had happened, the photos seemed prophetic somehow, like Hitler's baby pictures. A feral glint in the eye. And yet, what could you see for sure? It was only a photo, after all. The closer you got, the grainier it became. Like any event that can be called historic, there is a mystery to the details that remains impenetrable. Flashes of light, an echo unexplained. Even now, months later, there are holes, days that can't be accounted for, in some cases, whole weeks. We know he did volunteer work in Austin, Texas, in August, the year before the event. Organizers remember him as a bright kid, hard-working. 10 months later, he was working as a roofer in Los Angeles, fingernails black with tar, a skinny man perched on sweltering shale, breathing the smoky air. He'd been on the road for more than a year at that point, a rubber hobo losing himself in the great American absence. Somewhere along the way, he changed his name. He started calling himself Carter Allen Cash. He liked the sound of it, the feel on his tongue. His given name was Daniel Allen. He was 20 years old. As a boy, he had never been attracted to the mindless aggression of men. He did not collect toy guns or turn everything he touched into a weapon. He saved birds that had fallen from their nests. He shared. And yet, there he was in Tulane, Texas, test-firing automatics on a narrow gun range with cigarette butts on the floor. On clear May nights, he would sit on motel room floors and polish his thoughts. He would handle the bullets, opening the box and letting them crackle in his hand. He was a human arrow racing toward an inevitability. The TV news showed images of politicians making stump speeches in small-town diners and dusty Midwestern farmhouses. It was an election year, voters and candidates, pundits and money rushing toward a great Democratic surge. Primary season was almost over. Partisan conventions loomed. Sitting on his motel room floor, Carter Allen Cash fantasized casting his vote with a bullet. When he was 7, he lived for the swing. He would pump his feet and point his heels toward the sky, yelling, "More! More!" He was a voracious child, unstoppable, and so alive it made everyone around him seem sickly and still. At night, he would lie in a tangled heap on his bed, clothes half on, his brow knit, fists clenched, like a twister that had run out of air. Who was this boy, and how did he become a man in a motel room fondling bullets? What made him ditch his comfortable life and embrace an act of barbarity? I have read the reports. I have watched the footage. But the answer continues to elude me. More than anything, I want to know. I am his father, you see. He is my son.